And also today now we've got a very special guest, or guests I should say. We've got Alan Jones, aka Alan Dobbs Jones, and he's coming to talk about his book. So he's here now.
Yeah.
Hello? Right. So what's your book about then?
It's about international drug smuggling in the 70s.
Right, okay.
And I smuggled cannabis or hashish from North Africa, Morocco, North Africa, to Scandinavia, and delivered it in Oslo. And roughly went through about 11 countries, roughly travelling like 5,000 miles by vehicle, car or van. Mm-hmm. And that's basically just the start of the book.
Right, so it starts off with it. You had a bit of life before doing that as well, didn't you? You were born, you had some sort of life feature before that.
Oh, I had yes,
local boy, knew you were born.
Very interesting, yeah. I suppose. Right. I've not only been in prison in North Africa and mainland Spain, I've also been in prison in the UK, which I've met a lot of unsavoury people.
Right, okay, should we discuss some of those
later?
So who have you brought along with you today?
I have brought along Anita Child.
Hello.
And Kaylee.
Hi.
Kaylee Taylor. Anita is my co-writer, and Kaylee is our proofreader.
Right, okay, excellent.
How I met these two young... I've known Kaylee, you know. Actually lived in my street, didn't you?
Yeah, that's
opposite,
right.
You know. And a couple of years ago, just over 2 years ago, I was outside the Bagland Hotel talking to a couple of friends, and Andrew Miles in particular, he turned around and he wanted to hear one of the stories. Well, I've never completed a story, I always give out snippets, you know. So Anita came along with a fiancé, Neil, and I felt a little bit awkward because they were complete strangers. So I started talking to Anita and Neil, and they disbelieved me. You know, they just went inside and said,
that can't be true.
There's some crackpot outside, you know, telling this little story. And of course, for a while...
I kept asking him story after story, and I'm thinking, this crap sounds quite real. And then after a while, I went away and I hid myself in Truckee Library, and I found 16 newspaper articles.
Aha, so that's
14 all front page. And it said exactly what, you know, the prison scene was talking about. And being in a psychiatric hospital.
Amazing.
So it's very interesting snippets.
I would say, yes, she pursued me back to the
new
one, which is Kaylee's home with her parents. And we sat down, and in the past, I'll be honest with you, loads of my friends, and Dave Watkins in particular, we have spoken about it for hours. And could be good friends, right? And he kept on saying, write a book, like lots of other friends. But Anita turned round and said, I'll help you.
I
found it very difficult to get my thoughts on paper. You know, and well, it's gone from there until the completion, and we were stuck at one point that we had to have a proofreader going through like agents and publishing companies. They advised us to get a proofreader, so it didn't take very long before I thought, Kaylee, student in university studying law. Which would be brilliant for me, because in my school I could get tripped up. Essential, really. And they're both young, beautiful young girls. They are. They've really worked hard. You know, I can't take all the credit for this, honestly.
That's good. You've brought a few tracks there as well, which do relate to events in the book as well, you said. So first track we've picked is Queen by Bohemian.
Brilliant, my music, like I just been when you're out in prisons abroad in North Africa and Spain, we were allowed a radio cassette, and we could purchase or get sent in cassettes, right? So all the music is related to a person in the book.
Right.
Okay. You know.
So this one, Bohemian Rhapsody, we can't actually mention who he's related to, can we?
It's about a killer.
Yes, about a killer.
So this was in
This was in Carabanchel. It was in a psychiatric unit for criminally insane. It was an asylum.
In Madrid. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you working there then?
I was working as a nurse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what year was this then, roughly?
Well, he was in prison in he was in prison in North Africa, and then he got shipped to mainland Spain because he had an attempt to escape.
And
he ended up in Carabanchel, mm-hmm. working as a psychiatric nurse because it was a prison job. Normally you have librarians or kitchens, but in Spain you can be a psychiatric nurse in a prison despite being a prisoner.
No qualifications.
Okay. They just let you do it.
Yeah.
Well, there is a day for the day.
Yeah.
See, if the application was successful, mm-hmm. and you was accepted to work in this hospital, you had to speak Spanish, quite good Spanish, right? To get accepted, but I was there anyway, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the reason I went there was because when you work there, they call it a day for a day. One day working in this hospital meant a day's freedom, but it worked out like three times a year, every 4 months, that would class as another 4 months off your sentence, but they only looked at this every 4 months, so you made sure that you behaved yourself, because if you didn't behave yourself and you lost your job, then you would lose all that extra remission. So we had to be on our toes. Mm-hmm. And there were no Spanish male nurses, enfermeros we called them in Spanish. There were no male nurses at all that were Spanish. They were all European or American. And because they wouldn't subject the Spanish to see what their own people would do to them in this asylum.
Okay. Okay, right. So have a bit of music now then. I've got two versions of Bohemian Rhapsody, so you can choose which one. I've got it's Queen version, which is live from Nebworth off the Live Magic CD, and I've got another one by Trotty Male Voice Choir. So local
It is in
all fairness, Trotty Male Voice, the Queen version, they actually leave off the Farodango a bit.
Oh, okay, with Chucky.
So Chucky, do that. So.
Yes. Yes.
Keep it local. Yeah.
Okay, then, let's cue that one up then. We've got...
Keep it local.
Yeah.
Right, oh, this is Bohemian Rhapsody by Trotty Male Voice Choir.
Yay!
I don't think I get to say that.
I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low. Oh, Mama, just killed a man. Trigger now, he's there. Mama, life has just begun, but now I've got it, thrown it all away. Oh, Mama. Nothing really. my spine. Body's aching all the time. Goodbye, everybody. I've got to go.
Got to leave you all behind and face it through.
Oh, see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolts of lightning, very, very frightening. Meet Galileo,
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 Galileo, Galileo, Figaro.
I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, spending his life on this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go, let him go. Bismillah, we will not let you go, let him go. Bismillah, we will not let you go, let him go. We will not let you go, let me go. We will not let you go, let me go.
No, 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 no.
Mamma mia, mamma mia, mamma mia, let me go.
The heirs he bought has a devil put aside for me. For me, for me.
So you think you can stone me and spit in my eye?
So you think you can love me and leave me tonight?
Anyone can see nothing really matters. Nothing really matters to me.
Them two.
Giving away plot points there. that was a Trotting Mare Voice Choir there, Bohemian Rhapsody. We'd like to apologise for the technical difficulties we've had at the start. It was a little bit quiet. Hopefully we've corrected that now. We've pushed everything up to the max.
But I can hear things now.
You can hear now. Can you hear me? I can hear you anyway, because it's so loud.
Yeah, you can hear me in Austria, though.
Yeah, so maybe we'll test the system later and play some merch bar or something. We'll see how it goes.
Where do we know, you know?
Right. Okay, so for those of you who just joined us, you're listening to That's the Music, That's Just Noise with who?
And Sebastian.
Indeed. And we've got Alan Dogs Jones on the show, who's going to talk about his book, and he's also got the lovely Anita and Kaylee. Sorry, when I said lovely Anita, I also mean lovely Kaylee as well.
Yeah. Oh, she's lovely. Yeah. She
wasn't just the lovely Anita, yeah. And Kaylee's in here as well. So, you've been talking about the book. It's in large part, it's about the time you spent in prison through the 70s and yes. 80s as well, was it?
Yes, up to right. the 80s. I was recently 82.
Right. So I'll go back to the start then, so it was of the book. I guess it starts when you were born and things, is it?
Well, no, it doesn't actually, doesn't does it?
Right.
No, we kind
not
of...
Not as early as that.
Right,
with
okay.
the book, we kind of started from the middle.
Right, is it postmodern? Does it go back and start then later, or does it start in the middle?
We right. sent you right into the action, so right, okay. it's after a prison escape in North Africa.
Right,
and
okay.
he's in 2 weeks solitary. So right. that's the first chapter.
Okay.
And then you go back to the beginning, so saying about growing up in the Rhondda.
Yeah, so you were born locally then, where in the Rhondda?
Yeah, Pentra.
Pentra,
Twan
okay, Pen- right.
Twan Pentra.
In all a right. pub.
Yeah. I was actually born in the Llewellyn's Arms Hotel. It's okay. no longer existing now, but that's where I was born.
Right. Start doesn't mean to go on.
Yes.
Considering yeah, most people are actually conceived in Rome, that's where I'm actually born.
Full circle of life.
Okay, so from there then, it was prison in this country first.
I done two sentences in this country. One when I was very, very young, I was sentenced to Borstow.
Right. Okay.
That was okay, really.
Right.
You know.
But you were sent to Cardiff Prison straight away before they could find Borstow.
When I was sentenced by the Quarter Sessions or the in Cardiff Crown Court they call it now. Obviously, you had to go to the adult prison in Cardiff. You know, right. with uh-huh. all the Borstow boys were chucked in with all the convicts. You know, all mm-hmm. the lags and all that lot. Yeah. Right. That's where I first met, I didn't know at the time, John Strathern, that paedophile murderer and murdered children.
Right,
you know,
okay.
that was a little bit of an experience, which I won't go into further, you know.
Uh-huh. Is that mentioned in the book then?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, that is, yes, it is, uh-huh. yes.
It's quite yes. a horrible moment.
When
so did you know when you met him that something was not quite right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, right.
Oh, definitely.
Because you were only 16 as well.
I was, yes.
So oh, just definitely. Something about him that just gave you an odd vibe.
Oh, he gave you the horrors. Oh, yeah. Just to look at the.
Right.
You don't swear.
I was going to say that.
Right, you can.
I was going to.
I think they've been warned.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say it. Yeah, yeah, to all paedophiles anyway, you know.
Right.
We are.
Yeah.
And, when I was allocated then through the system, I went to Borstal, Holsley Bay.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name, that MP, the author? He spent time there as well.
Jeffrey Archer.
Yeah.
Good old Jeff. Well done, Jeff. Yeah.
Doesn't remember him say that, but anyway.
And while I was there, I struck up a friendship with an Indian lad. Well, of course, at the time, there was no prejudice like you got today. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He was a lonely figure, so I became good mates with him. Edwin Bush.
Okay,
and to my horror, on his release, not long after, they hung him. He was the second last man to get hung in the country, in the UK. Yeah. You know, so...
So what did you go to prison for originally then, when you were 16?
When I was 16... along with two young friends of mine, I will mention their names now, Vernon Guire and Di John. Right? Vernon has been my lifelong friend, lives in London, lived up there for 40 years, but we were, you know, small-time sort of villains or hooligans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We robbed solicitors, and not houses, not people, mm-hmm. we robbed solicitors' offices just before the Christmas. So that's what we got called for.
Right.
It was money and boots.
Yes.
All right.
Later on, shall I mention the garage?
No.
Anyway, in the Rhondda Valley is another local friend of mine who lives down the road. I won't mention his name now. Mm-hmm. Right. he helped me when I was abroad with my finances, my situation financially, right? So I won't mention him by name. You know who we are, don't you, Brian?
Is that one of your partners now?
If you're listening. Right? And we went into a local showrooms in the evening and we took two expensive cars out of there. We stole them. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, there was a lovely safe in there as well. So we took that as a bonus. Well, we got caught. And I was sentenced to 4 years in prison.
Right. So from there, then, from Britain, you went to Africa, is that the...
Yes, well, while I was doing my four-year sentences in this country, right. I bumped into Hill, one of the Birmingham bombers, Mad Frankie Fraser, I struck up a friendship with him as well.
Uh-huh.
Although he wasn't allowed to mix with any of the prisoners because he was taken for his food on his own, taken to his place at work. Uh-huh. You know, but he was lucky if he could have a little, well, fortunately for me, he was in the next cell to me. Okay. So we could have a little matter, you know.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he a bit temperamental then?
No, Frankie.
Frankie?
Great. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
Right, is he?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, very, yeah, Frankie.
Okay.
Really.
Because
really
when Alan knew him, he had two, he, you know, had a lot of prison riots, started a lot of violence in prison.
Uh-huh. Oh, he did. He was sent to Hawfield Road in Bristol Prison. Because he threw one of the guards over. he threw one of the guards over the landing, off the landing, and he landed on the safety nets.
Right.
Well, apparently, yeah. I think Frankie went over with him.
Okay.
Frankie busted his leg, and he's still got a limp to this day. Because I have bumped into Frankie in London, mm-hmm. and he's still got a limp to this day. But that prison officer, he had to retire from work permanently.
Okay.
So
yeah.
that
serious,
they, yeah, well, of course. They gave him extra 10 years, I believe, on top of the
right. uh-huh.
the massive sentence that he was already spending.
So, yeah, then you went to Africa, was it after the...
Yes, after all that, yes. Right. I went through a couple of failed marriages, you know, and I was really at a loss to what to do. But the opportunity, I bumped into two of my old friends, and they're not local boys, right? And... this is where the opportunity came up. Would I like to go smuggling? And yes, okay. please.
So from there it was.
And yeah, I'd never been abroad in my life, and drive on the other side of the road. I thoroughly enjoyed it. All the excitement, going to Africa and all the different countries and the different cultures. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, because I can't imagine the first trip abroad that he did. He went 5,000 miles through 11 countries. On his own, no sat nav, you know, no AA maps.
That's the best way, isn't it?
So, yeah.
So which, what countries did you go to then? It was Africa,
Morocco.
Morocco.
No, but start from the beginning, so Dover.
Well, it was from this country, Dover to Calais, drive through France to Spain, down to Algeciras or Malaga, get a boat to either Tangiers or Ceuta, and. If I arrived in Ceuta, I'd have to drive the 60, 70 miles, whatever, to Tangiers. And from the city of Tangiers, I did go up to Katama to collect my goods. You know, I smuggled cannabis oil. I smuggled in powder form in a caravanette, first of all, before we went into kilo bars, you know, and driving to Katama. You can't go into that area unless you've got a Moroccan guide who's trusted,
mm-hmm.
you know, because even they got bloody guns up there and in that time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't fear nothing, you know. I just enjoyed the trip.
Just Tangiers must have been a...
Loved it.
Yeah, quite a cultural hotbed there, isn't it?
Yes,
Tangiers.
Yes.
Was William S. Burroughs went there after he shot his wife, didn't he? Is it? Yeah, a lot of cultural icons from sort of UK and America. They always ended up in Tangiers. I think Paul Bowles as well, the writer, went there for a little bit.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
William Burroughs, after the incident when he shot his wife, he escaped to Tangiers, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think that's where he wrote Naked Lunch.
Is it really?
I think so. Yeah.
we can find that out.
Yeah. The Wikipedia.
Allegedly
wrote Naked Lunch. Right, and from then, from Africa, it was Spain then, the next prison. Was that the...
Yes, well, I picked up my load, right, and I went to Oujda, the border now, from Morocco into Algeria.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a war or a conflict on that I could not get through any of...
Maybe spoiler.
Okay, right, you're going to say too much. Right, okay. Draw a line there. So, yeah, it does sound an incredible story. So,
but the North Africa thing, because Ceuta was a Spanish enclave, mm-hmm. That's why it was part of Spain. So even though
that's
North
why he's
Africa,
moved from
it was
a
Spanish
Spain,
prison
well,
system.
Right, okay.
And because he had the escape attempt and he's in prison, then they moved him to Spain because it was more secure. In
right.
prison across Spain.
Okay.
And they moved you around, didn't they?
Spain, that was the last place you spent in prison, then, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
From there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I think it was 11 prisons. You went all
yes.
Spain, like a little tour.
Yeah.
All right.
Prisons,
okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Nice. So, it's mainly a book about smuggling in prisons and things. So, what makes your story different then to sort of other books about prison and smuggling?
I have read one or two books, like Midnight Express.
Yeah.
I read the book, I wasn't impressed.
Right.
The film was brilliant, you know. And I've read, like the Cray twins, that all happened in this country, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Howard Marks, another guy I met, right,
yeah.
in America. Not the excitement, like being incarcerated in North Africa, Ceuta, which is Spanish-controlled, right? Yeah. And even on the mainland Spain, it is a different thing altogether.
Mm-hmm. You want to swear then, didn't
you? Yes, yes, yes.
Right, okay.
What makes it different, which you forgot to say, is it talks about smuggling, it talks about prison. There's so many books out there that talk about that. But this one is because he was a psychiatric nurse as a prison job, and we can't find another book on that.
Right, yeah, so it's basically looking at the kind of the sort of psychiatric nurse in different prisons around sort of the world.
Because it's full of killers, serial killers, you know, rapists.
When we went on the internet to search for information on Caliban Shell, we found out in 1995 they had destroyed the prison, is no longer there.
The human rights.
Yeah. Right, okay.
The human rights organization, they closed it down.
Right.
We've seen photographs.
Yeah. Because you hold political prisoners as well, like Etta.
Okay, right. Yeah. So they're all.
Yes.
But he didn't really see that side. He saw the psychiatric hospital. The
psychiatric.
Yes.
What other notorious sort of criminals did you meet then during that time?
Notorious. Oh,
we talked about some of them.
Or the Manuel Delgado Villegas. Mm. Now, he was a mass murderer.
Yeah, because I was looking at him on Wikipedia and he claimed to have killed about 40 people. I think he was arrested, sent away for killing 8, I think, was it?
Yeah.
There's not much information about him on Wiki, actually. So, again, it's quite a good thing if your books come out to have information about him.
I think it's Spanish, maybe, you know, if we...
Yeah.
on the Spanish, we could, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, met and spoken to that, to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
There was two Germans, but we can't trace them.
Yeah, the one thing we can't find is two Germans. A father and son that killed mother and daughter. Right. And that's the only one we can't find. They were in the hospital. And I met them, and they were so polite and nice.
They were gentlemen.
And then he found out what they'd done. Yeah. You know, they killed the mother and the wife. And
so I had access to all the prisoners' files, you see, the patients' files then.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was lucky in that way. If I want to know what the hell is he in for, then I had access to a friend of mine who would get into the filing system.
Because you wanted to check out how violent they were.
Yes, because I had to... In one of the departments that I worked in there, then you had to know something about them.
Yeah.
They were actually coming in off the streets.
And you were shocked, weren't you, Alan, when you found like somebody you befriended, and then you found out actually what they had then, and you were really shocked.
Right.
Like how you look at the person in the same way then.
Yeah, so you'd say there's a big difference then possibly between serial killers and things as opposed to something like paedophiles. You said with the paedophiles you could always tell there's something about them. For the serial killer that wasn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, sometimes they look, like in the book they seem to come across like you wouldn't ever believe.
Quite nice people.
They do, yes, the two Germans, there's father and son. They come across as gentlemen, like businessmen. They were very smartly dressed, they well-spoken, spoke English fluently, you know. Even went back to the Second World War, where they were saying, "Oh, we do like the British, you know, we got no qualms about it or whatever." You know, they really come across nice. I thought, "What nice guys!" Till I found out what they were in there for.
It's quite a common thing, I suppose, with a lot of serial murder and things, isn't it? A lot of people say how nice they were, like Ted Bundy.
Yeah, the neighbours, isn't it? Nice. Oh, it's only America. I love that.
I read
so quiet. Apart from his drills and chainsaws.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On my release from prison, I boarded the plane in Madrid Airport and I picked up a magazine, Spanish magazine, to read on the plane. And them two guys were actually in the magazine. But of course, I slung it after reading it. I got rid of it, didn't I? You got home. I just relieved to get home.
Yeah.
But I just can't find any information on the two guys.
Yeah.
So your duties as the nurse, was that kind of counselling or were you providing sort of medication and things for them?
Yeah, we provided all the medication. Mm-hmm. They did have doctors come in once in the morning, private psychiatrists and from outside. And they would obviously look at each patient and they would prescribe the pills that they had to be given, like two or three times a day, depending on each individual case, you know. But we administered them. We also administered injections.
Right.
And none of us had any qualifications, but there was no qualms about it. But
imagine, psychiatry was slightly more primitive than it was these days. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you have the ECT and all that then?
It's
all the therapies. Yeah. It's all that. Yeah.
You know, the shock therapy. You said you didn't really see that.
I wasn't allowed to see
shock,
the electric GC, whatever they call ECT, it, right?
Yeah.
You know, where they bounce up on the slab.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rosanero,
you had to, like, strap up prisoners.
Yes.
Or
we had to strap prisoners to the beds, naked, no mattress. Mm-hmm. We had to strap them, you know. And that happened regularly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having a day for a day. I should bury this and ignore it. But it was very difficult to do with a couple of the patients then.
Because you would even open the cells, like the prison guards, they would leave it to the nurses, as long as they could be trusted. You'd open up the prisoners, give them the food, give them the medication. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you took them twice a day, once in the morning to the psychologist, psychiatrist, and doctors.
Yeah. You have to remember that he was a prisoner himself. So even though he was doing all this as a nurse, he's actually a prisoner with no qualifications whatsoever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he'd be opening up the prisoners, and then the guards would be locking him up. It's odd.
Yes.
No. But in a way, sometimes that is a good thing, because a lot, especially that time, you get the doctors and everything, a lot of them didn't really know what they were doing anyway, even though they got the qualifications, because the psychiatry was quite, very much in its infancy then, wasn't it? So in sometimes it's better, they always left it to people who didn't know, or didn't think they knew what they were doing. So sometimes a lot of the doctors, they were doing all this stuff, and it was just, you know, there's no real proof for it at all, like, so in a sense it was quite nice to be able to do that.
But definitely say that Alan had, like, probably more hands-on every day than what the doctors and that did.
Yeah.
Were they still lobotomising then?
No, I don't think you saw any operations, did you, really?
Operations?
Any lobotomies or, operations?
Oh, no.
Right, okay, we'll have a break there for a minute, have a little bit of a track and a recharge. So, it's Gary's turn for a track.
Yes, it is. it was a great documentary on BBC4 for a bit of crouch rock, anyway. They didn't actually feature this track, anyway. This is from former members of Kraftwerk. This is Iblis and Marga. Hello. Yeah, I was a bit shocked. I haven't been speaking for the last half hour. Yeah, that was Iblis with Marga from the 1972 album Supernova. Fantastic bit of krautrock there. Love a bit of experimental German rock music in the late 60s and early 70s.
Well, of course, the documentary was on Friday.
It was. I think that's what reignited
the Dave Brubeck one.
It was, and I missed the Dave Brubeck one. And but it sounds like you missed the krautrock, and then you saw it.
I saw the krautrock.
You saw it afterwards, didn't you?
I saw Dave Brubeck as well.
Ah.
Which is quite interesting one, actually, the Dave Brubeck one, because he started out, well, now he doesn't really play much jazz. He tends to do more compositions of sacred works and things.
Fantastic.
Convert to the Catholic Church, I think. So we're saying on there that faith is kind of belief in things you can't prove. I started thinking about it. Music is kind of the same thing. That with music, it doesn't actually have to mean anything, does it? Music.
No.
You get enjoyment from it. Doesn't have to mean anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be about anything. Sometimes you just listen to a piece of music. I like that. It's like, why?
It's just that personal connection, isn't it? I think that's always the thing about music, isn't it?
Music
is
you
can intellectualize as much as you like, but if it just doesn't feel right, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But if it feels right, then great.
It's really just about sound being itself, in a way.
It is.
Which brings us nicely onto our next track, which is a track by John Cage, actually. Of course,
I like the way we do this. We bring these round.
The seamless segues we do, It's just like, didn't see that one coming at all.
Not at all, no.
But you didn't do it. I kind of slowly eased you into that one there.
You did, okay.
You did. All good. So, yeah, I've picked track off the 25-year retrospective concert of John Cage, and of course what we're doing on the show now after Christmas in support of getting John Cage's 433 to Christmas number one. We're going through and having a bit look at the work of John Cage, this vast repertoire of music he's done. So this is it's the first ever actually tape composition to come out of the United States. It's called Williams Mix from 1952, and it's done, it's basically for 4-track tape. So John Cage did one. They went out, and John Cage is very big on just getting sounds to exist on their own, when people listen to a piece of music, it's so disjointed that they don't actually hear it as a whole, they just hear the individual sounds. It's Zen philosophy, and I came bigly into that. So what he did with this one now, this is the first ever performance of it at this 25-year retrospective. It's also performed by Dave Tudor and Earl Brown, who, of course, big experimental musicians in their own right. What is good about this track is because it's a live version of it. At the end, you can hear the audience vastly different ideas of whether they enjoyed it or not. So it's one of those classic pieces of music when you really hear a divided audience. To some people, like clapping, bravo, bravo, and it's like, boo, boo. And it's one of those few moments in music. It's kind of like the Bob Dylan getting called Judas, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Neil Young getting, I think, abused on the Live Rust album, and to John Petraine added numerous times on his records. It's good we can actually hear a record, but something's happening in music, we can actually hear people just physically reacting to something.
Yeah, so very much like the Tokyo Tower, we won't touch it. That's another story.
Yeah, this is Williams Mix by John Cage, and yeah, stick with it, because the end is great. Like, actually, when they stop playing, it's the best bit, in a way.
Recommendation, isn't it?
It's a great track, but the interesting bit just comes out, it's the audience that would make this track, which again is quite a Cajun concept, isn't it?
Indeed,
it's
yeah.
Yeah, right, here we go, Williams Mix. I'm
talking to his son too.
Where's Ryan?
That was Williams' mix there by John Cage live from the 25-year retrospective concert.
Fantastic.
Classic little moment there, yeah, for the audience divided. We were saying, like, if they didn't like you, just why did they stay?
Yeah. But, that's happened to us anyway.
Anyway, right, we're here in the studio now with Alan Dobbs-Jones talking about his book, which is coming out. We'll talk about that later, anyway. That's the incredible story, basically, of all the prisons you've been through and the drug smuggling and things you've done through the 70s and the 80s, basically. We've been discussing a bit over the last hour. It's an incredible story. So how can people be sure that it is the truth?
I got the evidence. I kept this one. In this old passport here, there's enough evidence there to prove the countries I've been in. The British consulate, which I had a lot of problems with, his signature is in there. Mm-hmm. And we've had other documents, newspaper cuttings.
Yeah, we've got 16 newspaper reports. Yeah. Only two which aren't front page.
Yeah, yes.
Right. Okay. We want to source some more.
Yes. And when you're talking about real people, you don't make up stories. These are people which Some are alive, some are dead, right? And I am not a J.R. Tolkien or Roald Dahl. I haven't got that sort of imagination. But when people who read this book, when they read it, they can see you couldn't make it up. Honestly, you couldn't make it up. If you could, Anita, right, and Kaylee, they wouldn't be sitting with me today.
And I've also got a diary that he kept throughout his prison. Yes. Yes. It helped support the book for him to remember some things in Ireland.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because his mum bought it. She bought him a 4-year diary. Five-year diary?
Yeah.
And he didn't know his sentence, and she's upset then, thinking, oh, no, sent him a 5-year diary.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So apart from writing then, what other interests do you have?
Oh, I'm a fanatic on Saabs, Saab cars.
Right, okay.
I've had them for over, not just one. Right. About 118 years now, but I've had several before that, right? I'm a Saab fanatic. I love them. And also the old beloved Sealyham Terriers. I have one now, a 5-year-old dog called Dylan.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're brilliant. I love my dogs and my cars, you know.
Music as well, then? What was it?
Pardon?
Music?
Oh, music. Yeah. I love all sorts of music. Steve Miller Band.
Steve Miller.
I love Dylan. Right. You know, I like the old 60s, 70s, and 80s. You know.
Can I just say with the animals as well? In the book, he has quite a few prison pets as well.
Yes, I had cats. I had a rat.
Okay.
When I was in what they call below ground in the punishment cells, I had a visitor every evening, and I was a bloody big cat. A bloody big rat.
Right.
And I think I nicknamed him Bob as well. But we did become sort of friends because I didn't have anybody else to talk to, did I?
They weren't like official pets. They weren't
And also, during the prisons, in most of the Spanish prisons, I would say in all of them at the time, you were allowed cats. A lot were feral. A lot became pets. I had one called Marrakesh because her coat was like the sands of Marrakesh, golden. She was beautiful, you know.
Okay.
We kept several cats.
Because the reason why they kept them is because there was like a rat problem. So they had the cats there, they let them run free.
Most prisons were infested.
Rats and the cats as pets.
It's defecation because the rat was in Ceuta prison and the cats were in Cordoba prison,
Seville. Yes, yeah.
The cats had the better quality prisons, didn't they?
Yeah.
I'm not going there.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
All right, okay.
Because I've eaten one.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Smart, okay. Right. Well, it's funny you should mention Steve Miller actually, because that's the next track we've got by coincidence. It's funny you've actually chosen. So it's "Fly Like an Eagle" by Steve Miller.
Yeah.
Is there any particular reason you've chosen this one?
Yes. But I don't think I could talk about it.
Right.
Well,
I can talk about it. Yes.
Say it was in an old dresso. And you could see the Bay of Biscay from the prison.
Yes.
So it's on like a mountain?
Yeah, up in the Basque Country, north of Spain, Santander. El Dues was a big, huge prison there. And that's where I was supposed to spend the rest of my sentence. You know, because it's nearer to the French border, isn't it? That's one of the reasons. And it was a jail which was more or less foolproof, you couldn't escape.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But even that didn't deter me. But I used to play, I used to have the DJ there. We had great big loudspeakers outside of the prison and you could hear it for, you know, like half a mile away. It could be quite a large complex. And I was with one close friend of mine. And we used to listen to this. It was my choice of music. And we used to look over the Bay of Biscay and we see the seagulls and that. And of course, Steve Miller has always been a number one band for me. Obviously, like most of his music, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to constantly play this every day, maybe 2-3 times a day. Well, I used to go down and pinch the corn and the cob.
Okay, excellent. Right then, this is Fly Like an Eagle by Steve Miller Band.
slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.
You're listening to That's the Music, That's Just Noise, and that was the Steve Miller Band there with
Fly Like an Eagle.
He's no relation to Ed, by the way.
Ed Miller Band. I thought he's on Eddie the Eagle then.
Right, yeah, so we're in the studio now with Alan Dogs Jones. He's talking about his book, about his time spent in prison in Africa, Britain, and Spain. So you've been given a bit of a description about the conditions in some of these prisons. And some of them sound quite dire.
Yes.
So, would it be true to say in your book it's quite a depressive tone?
Oh, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. I would say ups and downs, emotional, an emotional ride, very emotional, and some parts of the sentence was you could laugh your head off, and then all of a sudden things would go down, but it would up and down all the time. I wouldn't say it was depressing even, you know, emotional, an emotional ride, but no, depressing would be the wrong word.
Some parts of the book do, like, you think Alan Abbott rock bottom, and how's he going to get back up from it? But you do always keep a positive head, don't you, throughout the book.
Yes.
And then you've always got the humour part of Alan as well, and his friends that he have made in the prisons that shine through. So you do feel his emotions throughout the book, that's portrayed very well. But then you just can't help but laugh. When things are really low, he always says something funny, so you don't stay low for long.
Okay.
And like in the prisons as well, the guards don't mind them smoking cannabis or taking any kind of drugs or drinking, as long as you behave.
Yes.
And that's so they had parties.
That's in the majority of Spain. The 11 or so prisons I spent in, bottles of lager, San Miguel or whatever, right? They were available. You could even purchase one bottle every meal time, which was three a day. Well, of course, the Spanish, a lot of the Spanish prisoners, they used to sell their cerveza, you know, their beer, at double the price, you know, to the mostly to the Europeans or the boys like myself who'd like to have a sip. And cannabis was freely available. Not so much in the northern or even in Madrid, around the Madrid area, and going further north to Spain, it gets a lot more scarce, so it takes a lot more skill to get a hold of it, you know, if you're a prisoner. But down in Malaga, Ceuta especially, there are absolute kilos of the stuff in the prisons. You know,
you smoked more in prison than you had ever.
I did, yes.
Yeah, used to have big room parties and things, and at one point they even made their own alcohol, which I won't say.
Yeah.
Parties and
Cordoba, we made hooch, which, you know.
Okay. Right, just to wrap things up now, do you have any sort of publicity and stuff to go with this book? What's the book called, actually? Have you got a working title for it?
No Half Measures.
Sticking with that.
And if people want to find out more about this now, where would they go?
If and when the publisher agrees to the title, then I'm going to dedicate the title to a guy who died just over a year ago, local, from Treorchy. And,
if you go onto Alan's website, which is www.alandogsjones.com and .co.uk, we're also on Facebook and Twitter, Alan Dogs Jones, all one word.
And if you type into Google Alan Dogs Jones, it'll be the first two that will come up on the search as well, so that's easy. And then I'll link you to either his main website or Facebook. And the rest.
Excellent. Right. Okay, and you've got one last track request now, then, yes?
Yes.
Mr. Tambourine Man,
Leave it a mystery.
This is for Chino.
This is North Africa prison, isn't it?
Yeah, North Africa prison, yeah.
Okay. Right, this is Mr. Tambourine Man, originally written by Bob Dylan. This is a live version, actually, by the Byrds, off their untitled album, which is erroneously titled, called Untitled.
Kind of defeats the object, doesn't it? Yeah.
They couldn't think of a title for us. Two of the members left the Byrds. So they said, right, we're starting off the new band now. So we should really give the album a really good title to suggest that it's missing a new beginning for the band.
Yeah.
So people are saying like Phoenix would call it and all that, and people are like, no, that sounds too cheesy. They couldn't decide. So it's Untitled. So they put Untitled on the sleeve.
Yeah.
And then mistakenly that got sent to the publisher. And it's pressed that was Untitled. So that's what ended up becoming Untitled. Right, this is Mr. Tambourine Man by the Byrds.